What if I told you that the reason you suddenly and desperately want a sugary pastry at 3 o'clock in the afternoon has absolutely nothing to do with a lack of willpower?
Yeah, and, well, everything to do with a microscopic turf war happening inside your intestines.
Exactly. Today, we are looking at a stack of research notes that just completely dismantled everything I thought I knew about metabolism.
It really reframes the whole concept, doesn't it?
It really does. The mission for you listening today is to do a deep dive into the 10 best probiotic foods for weight loss. But, I mean, we aren't doing this by counting calories.
No, definitely not.
We are going to decode the biological link between your gut bacteria and your metabolism, and we'll detail exactly how specific bacterial strains alter your body's ability to, burn fat effectively.
Right, because the source material we're analyzing today, it relies on a highly complex theoretical framework called conditional collapse theory, or ODECCT.
Okay, let's unpack this, because treating human biology like a software engineering project is a wild pivot.
It is, but it asks you to stop viewing weight loss as an accounting ledger, calories in versus calories out, and start viewing your gut as an operating system.
So the food is the code.
Precisely. The food you consume acts as literal code to shift your body from a biological storage state into a utilization state.
Okay, before we get into the 10 specific foods, we really have to lay down the math here. The notes treat the gut as an ordinary differential equation system.
Right.
Walk me through how a differential equation applies to digestion, because that sounds intense.
Well, in physics and mathematics, an ordinary differential equation, or ODE, it basically models how a system changes over time based on its current state. The framework defines two main variables for your gut.
Okay.
First, you have the stationary rule. They call this the bacteria culture, the actual physical microbial community currently colonizing your digestive tract. You can think of this as the hard-coded software.
Got it.
And then you have the probability, which is your daily food intake. That is the input trajectory.
So the bacteria are the baseline operating system, and the food I eat is the data I'm like typing into the command line.
Exactly. And depending on what you type into that command line, the system settles into mathematical attractors.
Attractors.
Yeah, an attractor is simply a state that a dynamic system naturally gravitates toward. The source suggests that if you have the wrong stationary rule, meaning the wrong bacteria, your biological attractor is stuck in a basin of weight gain.
Meaning your body mathematically defaults to insulin resistance and systemic inflammation.
Right. But by consuming these specific 10 foods, you are essentially paying with energy to shift your biological attractor over to a basin of weight loss.
Which defaults to fat oxidation and cellular insulin sensitivity.
You've got it.
So wait, if I'm trying to lose weight just by starving myself on a crash diet, that's like trying to force the temperature down in a house by leaving the front door wide open in the middle of winter.
That is a great way to look at it. The system is just going to fight back.
But eating these specific bacterial strains, it actually reprograms the thermostat itself.
Yeah, you are changing the underlying mechanism that regulates the temperature. You aren't fighting the system, you are rewriting the rules of the system to trigger a permanent state transition.
All right, let's get into how we actually rewrite those rules. The notes break this down into specific biological interventions.
Right, the first phase.
Yeah, the first group of foods focuses on intercepting our satiety and metabolic signaling. So we're looking at natto, apple cider vinegar, and green tea.
To alter that mathematical trajectory, the most immediate lever we can pull involves altering the hormonal signals that dictate hunger and fat storage.
And we start with natto, right?
Yes, natto. It's a traditional Japanese dish made from fermented soybeans. The biological payload here is a specific strain of bacteria called Bacillus subtilis, alongside an enzyme called nattokinase.
Now, I saw the notes linking natto to GLP-1. That's glucagon-like peptide 1, which is the exact same biological pathway targeted by all the modern, highly engineered weight loss injections.
Yep, the exact same one.
I'm struggling to see how eating fermented soybeans triggers the same physiological cascade as a pharmaceutical peptide, though.
What's fascinating here is how Bacillus subtilis interacts with the L cells lining your distal gut. When you consume natto, this bacteria actually survives the stomach acid.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it survives, and it physically prompts those specialized cells to drastically increase their natural secretion of GLP-1.
And this hormone, cascades through your system and does something vital for weight management, right?
Yeah.
It dramatically slows down gastric emptying.
Exactly.
Meaning, like, the physical volume of food literally remains in the stomach for a longer duration.
Yeah.
Just continuously stretching the mechanoreceptors.
Right. And while that food is sitting there, your gut is sending a relentless, blaring signal to your brain via the vagus nerve indicating profound satiety.
So the probability of you overeating your next meal drops to near zero. Not because you are, you know, exercising some massive amount of willpower, but because the biological signaling just won't allow it.
It's a mechanical override, basically.
Okay, that handles the volume of food. But what about the metabolic response to the food that does get digested? The notes highlight apple cider vinegar next.
Specifically pointing out the acetic acid, or acetate.
Right. How does that work?
Well, acetate acts as a highly disruptive signaling molecule once it hits your bloodstream. When you consume it, ideally from raw, unpasteurized vinegar that still contains the live bacterial culture, it actively inhibits the specific digestive enzymes in your gut.
The enzymes that cleave complex starches into simple sugars.
Exactly. It's essentially throwing a wrench into the gears of carbohydrate digestion, so the starches take significantly longer to break down.
Which means you experience a severely blunted glucose curve after a meal.
Yes. And without a sharp spike in blood glucose, you avoid the corresponding spike in insulin.
And as we know, insulin effectively locks the gates on your adipose tissue. It literally prevents fat cells from releasing stored energy.
Right. Insulin is the storage hormone. By using acetate to artificially flatten that glucose curve, you keep your insulin baseline low.
Thereby keeping the fat-burning gates wide open for hours after a meal.
Precisely. And once those fat-burning gates are forced open, the notes introduce green tea, or matcha, to actually drive the extraction of that fat.
The critical compounds in green tea are the EGCG polyphenols, right?
Yeah, the EGCG polyphenols. When combined with the natural caffeine, these polyphenols actively inhibit the specific enzyme responsible for degrading norepinephrine in the synaptic cleft.
Okay, norepinephrine is the primary chemical messenger driving lipolysis, which is the breakdown of fat stores. Normally, the body clears it out rapidly to return the system to homeostasis.
But green tea prevents that clearance. It artificially extends the half-life of norepinephrine.
Meaning the chemical signal whispering break down fat to your cells remains constantly amplified.
That's it, exactly.
Okay, so natto hacks the GLP-1 pathway to force mechanical fullness. Apple cider vinegar blunts the enzymatic breakdown of starches to suppress insulin. And green tea inhibits the degradation of lipolysis signals.
A pretty powerful combination.
But the ODE-CCT framework points out a massive vulnerability here. None of these hormonal hacks matter if the body's structural integrity is compromised, right?
Not at all. If the system is dealing with severe internal fires, the hormonal signals get completely overridden.
Which brings us to the next category, fortifying the gut lining and neutralizing systemic inflammation.
Right. Because you cannot force a system into a utilization state if it perceives it is under attack. We are looking at three specific fermented foods here, raw sauerkraut, kimchi, and a Swedish fermented milk called fill.
The primary mechanism for the sauerkraut involves a heavy concentration of Lactobacillus plantarum.
Yes.
The notes describe Lactobacillus plantarum as essentially acting like a biological sealant for the intestinal wall. It prevents something called leaky gut by stopping the translocation of lipopolysaccharides, or LPS, into the bloodstream.
Yeah, LPS are endotoxins. They are structural components that literally break off from the cell walls of gram-negative bacteria in your gut.
And under healthy conditions, they remain safely contained in the digestive tract and are just excreted.
Right. But if your gut lining is highly permeable, these toxins slip through the intestinal barrier and flood into your systemic circulation.
So wait, if these LPS toxins are leaking into the blood, it's almost like a ship taking on water. The structural breach in the gut wall is the physical leak.
Yeah.
And the metabolic inflammation the notes talk about is basically the immune system panicking like a crew dropping everything to bail out water.
I love that analogy. To take that ship analogy a step further, when the immune system is panicking to clear those endotoxins, it demands massive amounts of immediate, readily available energy.
It demands glucose.
Exactly. This systemic inflammation literally hijacks your neurochemistry, driving intense, uncontrollable cravings for sugar.
Oh, wow. So Lactobacillus plantarum patches the physical holes in the gut lining. The LPS leakage halts, and the immune system finally stands down.
And suddenly that 3 p.m. sugar craving we talked about at the beginning just vanishes because the underlying biological panic has been resolved.
That is wild. But what if the inflammation is already raging? The notes move straight from sauerkraut to kimchi.
Kimchi is fascinating because it leverages a really powerful synergy. You are delivering potent lactic acid bacteria to continue the structural repair of the gut, but you are combining it with capsaicin, which is the active compound in the chili peppers used in the fermentation.
The capsaicin interacts with brown adipose tissue, right?
Yeah.
The metabolically active fat that generates heat.
Yes, it triggers rapid thermogenesis. The capsaicin forces your central nervous system to activate that brown fat, compelling your body to burn through excess energy stores just to maintain its core temperature.
So you're utilizing the bacteria to suppress the inflammatory cascade while simultaneously using the chili compounds to ignite the metabolic furnace.
Exactly. It's a two-pronged attack.
Which brings us to the final food in the structural defense category.
Hmm.
Phil, the Swedish fermented milk utilizing Lactococcus lactis. I was curious why the framework considers this distinct from something like kefir.
Well, Lactococcus lactis plays a highly specialized role in optimizing the pH of your upper gastrointestinal tract.
Oh, so it's about acidity.
Right. It actively maintains a precise, slightly acidic environment. This acidity acts as an invisible barrier, aggressively suppressing the overgrowth of pathogenic, highly inflammatory bacterial strains that thrive on simple sugars.
It sets up a hostile environment for the bad bugs before they can even establish a foothold. So we've patched the leaky ship with sauerkraut, burned off the excess cargo with kimchi, and secured the perimeter with fel.
We've established a rock-solid structural foundation.
But the notes transition here into something entirely different. Extraction efficiency. Basically how our bodies actually pull calories out of the food we eat. This is where kefir and tempeh come in.
And this is a crucial paradigm shift in the framework. You see, not all the calories you put into your mouth are actually absorbed into your bloodstream.
Right.
The efficiency of that caloric extraction is entirely dictated by the specific composition of your microbiome.
Here's where it gets really interesting. I was reading the section on kefir, and I mean, the mechanism described here is genuinely unsettling. It centers on the ratio between two major phyla of bacteria in the gut, Firmicutes and Bacteroidetes.
Yes. The notes claim a high ratio of Firmicutes is strongly correlated with obesity because they are just too efficient.
Too efficient.
Yeah. They possess highly specialized genetic pathways that allow them to ferment indigestible dietary fibers and salvage the resulting short-chain fatty acids.
Hold on. You're telling me that if I have an overpopulation of Firmicutes, my gut bacteria are essentially scavenging my digestive waste for extra calories that my body naturally couldn't process.
Yep.
And then sneaking those extracted calories back into my bloodstream. That feels like a massive biological betrayal.
I mean, from a modern perspective, yes, it really is.
Yeah.
But in an ancestral environment marked by frequent famine, bacteria that could squeeze an extra 100 calories out of fibrous roots and tubers, well, they provided a critical survival advantage.
Oh, I see. So it's an evolutionary mismatch. In an environment of caloric abundance, that hyper-efficient extraction becomes a severe metabolic liability.
Precisely. And the framework posits that kefir reverses this.
How so?
Kefir introduces an incredibly diverse, aggressive community of bacteria and yeasts that physically outcompete the Firmicutes for resources in the gut lumen.
So regular consumption drives the ratio heavily back toward bacteroidates.
Right, effectively downgrading your digestive system's ability to harvest those hidden calories.
Okay, that handles accidental calorie harvesting. But what about the food we want to absorb? We still need protein to maintain metabolic rate and muscle mass during weight loss. The notes highlight tempeh next, which is an Indonesian fermented soy product utilizing a fungus called Rhizopus oligosporus.
The primary advantage of tempeh is maximizing what the ODCCT framework terms satiety per calorie.
Satiety per calorie, I like that.
Yeah, because plant proteins, particularly legumes like soybeans, are often bound up with anti-nutrients like phytic acid, which aggressively block the absorption of key minerals and make the protein really difficult to digest.
So the body has to spend a massive amount of metabolic energy and secrete heavy amounts of enzymes just to break the structural matrix of the food apart.
Exactly. But the Rhizopus oligosporus fungus essentially pre-digests the dense soy matrix during the fermentation process.
It does the work for you.
Right. It secretes phytase, an enzyme that neutralizes the phytic acid and breaks the complex proteins down into highly bioavailable peptides. The result is a Teflon-like digestive efficiency.
Meaning you absorb maximum protein to preserve metabolically active muscle tissue without the digestive distress, all wrapped in a dense prebiotic fiber network that sustains satiety.
You couldn't ask for a better profile for weight loss.
Which perfectly sets up the final piece of this entire biological puzzle. Introducing all these powerful cultures, you know, the Bacillus subtilis in natto, the Lactobacillus plantarum in sauerkraut, the yeasts in kefir, it's entirely pointless if they don't survive once they take up residence in the gut.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the framework explicitly states that the probability input requires the correct stationary substrate to thrive.
So if you want to sustain a specific biological outcome, you have to continually feed the organisms responsible for that outcome. You have to supply the targeted prebiotics.
Yes, and the notes isolate two highly specific fuels for this exact purpose, Jerusalem artichokes and underripe bananas.
Jerusalem artichokes are fascinating because they are neither from Jerusalem nor are they artichokes. They look more like ginger roots, but the cellular structure is packed with the type of fiber called inulin.
And inulin is the absolute preferred substrate for a highly specialized bacteria known as Akkermansia muciniphila.
In the realm of microbiome sequencing, Akkermansia is widely considered the gold standard biomarker for a naturally lean phenotype, right?
It is. Because its primary function is interacting directly with the mucin layer of the gut lining.
How does that work?
Well, it quite literally feeds on the mucus, but in doing so, it stimulates the goblet cells in the intestinal wall to produce even more mucus. It creates a robust, highly fortified mucosal barrier.
And clinical data consistently shows that a thick mucus layer, driven by high populations of Akkermansia, is directly correlated with lower total body fat percentages and vastly superior peripheral glucose clearance.
Exactly. The inulin in the Jerusalem artichokes acts as the high-octane fertilizer that allows the Akkermansia population to explode and perform that structural fortification.
The second prebiotic fuel is underripe bananas, specifically green bananas, because they're loaded with type 2 resistant starch, or RS2.
Resistant starch earned its name because its physical structure literally resists cleavage by amylase enzymes in the small intestine.
So it bypasses upper digestion entirely, remaining intact, until it reaches the anaerobic environment of the colon.
Right, where the bacteria heavily ferment it, producing short-chain fatty acids, particularly one called butyrate.
And this is where the notes detail a physiological phenomenon that absolutely blew my mind. They call it the second meal effect.
The implications of the second meal effect completely upend how we view meal timing and carbohydrate tolerance.
So wait, if the fermentation of the resistant starch takes hours to travel to the colon and produce that butyrate? Well, the butyrate is entering systemic circulation and peaking right as I'm sitting down for my next meal.
Yes.
It's almost like a metabolic time machine. Eating a green banana at breakfast sends a biological care package to the version of me eating lunch.
That is the exact mechanism. The circulating butyrate fundamentally alters the insulin receptors on your cell membranes, vastly improving their sensitivity.
So when you consume your next meal hours later, your pancreas is required to secrete significantly less insulin to handle the incoming glucose load.
The hormonal spike of the second meal is heavily blunted by the microbial fermentation of the first meal.
When you step back and look at the entirety of the ODE-CCT framework, it represents a massive paradigm shift.
Yep.
Weight loss is not a math problem. It is an ecological project.
It really is.
By integrating these 10 foods into your diet, you know, the kefir outcompeting the calorie scavenging bacteria, the natto hacking your satiety hormones, the sauerkraut sealing the gut wall, and the green bananas priming your cellular insulin sensitivity for the future, you are quite literally reprogramming your operating system.
You are permanently shifting your biological trajectory from a state of storage to a state of utilization.
It forces us to confront a deeply unsettling reality about our own biology, doesn't it? We've mapped out how cravings, the magnitude of an insulin spike, the threshold of physical fullness, and even the mathematical efficiency of caloric extraction are heavily dictated by the specific microbial colonies residing in our digestive tract.
The stationary code. And if introducing a food like raw sauerkraut or inulin-rich artichokes can literally rewrite the code of what your body craves and how it partitions energy, well, we have to ask a profound question.
Which is?
Who is actually in charge of your appetite? Is it you making a conscious, autonomous choice based on willpower? Or is it the trillion-member microbial colony you are feeding every single day?
That is a wild thought to leave on. The next time you sit down to eat, you might want to look at your plate, not just as calories, but as code. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you on the next one.